I'm here with Alexander McCurse, editor-in-chief of The Duran. Alexander, let's talk about the Irish elections once again. And Sinn Féin is now, they've got the go-ahead, I guess. They've got the green light now to try to form a government, and they're going to form a left government, a left-oriented government. The final results are in. It was close. I mean, you can definitely say that Sinn Féin surged to a victory, but you know, the differences are definitely not to the point where you can have a majority or even a strong minority, I would say. So, I mean, there's going to have to be a lot of horse trading, at least between the left-oriented parties, to try and form a government, if they can even form a government. We don't know that. And it could actually take, I read it could actually take up to 90 days to get some kind of government in place. Now, I got an email from a viewer, Michelle, and I thank her for that email. She directed me to a Dr. Steve Turley video, and I actually watch Dr. Steve Turley, and he has a great channel, so I recommend it to everyone that's watching. I'm sure a lot of people are already subscribed to his channel. But he had an interesting take on the elections and on Sinn Féin, and he kind of described Sinn Féin's victory as something akin to like a Bernie Sanders victory in the United States. And he made it a point, and I'm paraphrasing a lot of his video. Once again, I recommend people go find that video. He was saying that a lot of what you see, a lot of the votes that have been funneled to Sinn Féin, especially in the younger demographic, which is struggling with a lot of economic problems, especially in the housing market. Yeah. And I think you've detailed, Alexander, how expensive and how difficult the housing market is in Ireland, and especially in Dublin. I mean, from what I hear, the rents are through the roof, and buying a home is extremely difficult. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that vote gets funneled into Sinn Féin because you really don't have a counterbalance, a Trump type of leader or a party that you'll see in Hungary or in Italy or even a Le Pen. And as someone who's Greek and who lives in Greece, and as you are Greek, we really have the same dynamic in Greece as well. We really don't have a viable, vibrant, legitimate conservative right party either. New Democracy, which is in power now, is very much centrist. They're pretty much down the middle. I even say they even lean a little bit to the left at times. And then, of course, you have, you know, Syriza on the radical left, which takes it to a whole different, you know, direction. But I definitely understood that analogy where he was comparing Sinn Féin to what a Bernie administration or a Bernie presidency would mean for the U.S. and how you also have a gap on the conservative right side of things. So that's why you have this Sinn Féin surge. So, Alexander, what do you make of that analysis? What do you make of the government that's going to try and get formed in Ireland, and anything else that you would like to comment on in relation to the video that we did the other day on the elections in Ireland?
I think the comment is extremely insightful, and that's, I think, exactly the point. If you are a Irish nationalist who is opposed to the EU, you have no one to vote for apart from Sinn Féin. Now, Sinn Féin may not be a strong anti-EU party, but it is the nearest thing you have in Ireland to a nationalist Eurosceptic party. It has been Eurosceptic and indeed anti-EU in the past. And it is, of course, within Ireland, the party that represents, if you like, Irish nationalism, all the way back to 1905, when it led the independent struggle against Britain. And of course, Sinn Féin is a very left-wing party. Of course, it has very left-wing policies. But I think in many respects, the comparison with Bernie Sanders is spot on. I think it would follow the same kind of, if you look at policies, if you actually unpack its policies, they're almost exactly the same. I think there's rather more solidity to Sinn Féin in the sense that it's actually a party, whereas Bernie Sanders is a movement led.
Is a man and a movement.
A man and a movement. So, I mean, there is that difference. But in terms of policies, is very much the same. I, by the way, don't think they're going to form a government. I mean, I don't think they have the numbers. And I think Fiona Foyle, which once upon a time when it was led by people like the former Irish Prime Minister, Eamon de Valera, way back in the 60s, was a right-wing conservative Eurosceptic party, at least it would have been in those days. They are absolutely what you describe. They are middle of the road, globalist centrists, pro-EU, part of the EU establishment, very contented and happy with the way things are in Ireland now, uninterested in the conditions of, you know, young people or people who find themselves on the wrong end of the housing ladder and all those sort of things. Absolutely, fully and completely integrated into the EU system, of which
would you describe them as like a German CDU or a Greece New Democracy type of party?
They are
very much down the middle.
Exactly. I mean, they are absolutely that. New Democracy is exactly what they look like. I mean, the Greek New Democracy Party, I would hesitate to call them like the CDU, because even though the ideologies are the same, and by the way, can I make it clear? I mean, Fianna Fáil likes to pretend it's the more right-wing party. Fine Gael likes to pretend it's the more left-wing party. They are the same. I mean, it's almost impossible for me as an outsider to see that there is any difference between them. And that's also, I gather, the view increasingly of more and more people within Ireland itself. But the only reason I would say that they're slightly different from the CDU is that at least the CDU in Germany is in charge. I mean, it actually decides things in Europe. The role of Irish politicians, if they come from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, is that they just take orders, which is essentially what New Democracy does in Greece. So I mean, there is no difference between them. They are utterly, as I said, vassals, if you like, of the EU system. And it's increasingly clear that more and more people in Ireland, as all over the EU, are very dissatisfied with this. Now, as I said, if there had been a Farage-type figure in Ireland, actually I'm surprised in some ways that there isn't, but let's assume there had been, or an Orbán figure, perhaps even more plausibly, because, you know, Ireland has a particular history where you might have expected an Orbán-type figure to emerge. I would have expected such a person to gain a great deal more support. But there is no such person. So, as I said, they vote Irish people who are opposed to that kind, to this sort of complex of European integrationist globalist politics. They end up voting for Sinn Féin because they have nowhere else to go. May I add, actually, that, you know, Sinn Féin is a left-wing party now. It hasn't always been at all times in its history. It's a point which I was, you know, on the tip of discussing in our previous video, but it would have been difficult to talk about it. But, you know, there have been times in its history when it's been a rather right-wing, very conservative, Catholic nationalist movement. At the moment, it's not. Nowadays, it's become very much, I think, under the influence of people in Northern Ireland. The leadership was to some extent reorganized around political leaders in Northern Ireland. It's become a left-wing party and a very radical left-wing party, but it has not always been so. And I think now, though, it probably is settled for this and will be a left-wing party for the future. I don't think it will form the government. I don't think it has the numbers. I think we're going to see a stitch up again between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. I think that's they will find a way of keeping Sinn Féin out. And if Sinn Féin were to become the government, I don't think they'd be the government for very long. But having said that, if we disregard what Sinn Féin is and look at why people voted in Ireland the way they did, which is the most important thing, this is a breakthrough. And by the way, the person you were speaking about, Turley, on his video, I mean, he said that, and he's absolutely right. And, you know, he's, as you said, a conservative person, as I understand. Yeah.
Does that mean that you might have the potential for some type of open door for a conservative right party to rise? Is there even a structure in place, a mechanism for that? That's question number one. And question number two is, how did, why does Sinn Féin seem to drift towards this position? You said they, it sounds to me that they've changed their position, their ideology and their beliefs many times over the decades. Why have they drifted into this? And I don't have a better word for it, this leftist populist type of position, or leftist nationalist, depending on what media you read or what analyst you're following. I think they've pretty much been described as a leftist populist or nationalist party.
And how
did they end up in this position?
And I think they will remain so. I think now this is conclusively what they have become. But Sinn Féin has had a certain very consistent positions. That one, it is against, it is for a united Ireland, entirely independent of Britain. It has tended to be very, very hostile to Britain. That, you know, that being its tradition. It's also tended to be, as I've said many times, an anti-imperialist party. It has been in its past, at times, a Catholic right-wing nationalist party. It became a left-wing nationalist party because, this is a complicated story, but because during the conflict in Northern Ireland, when the decision was made by its then leadership in the 1980s, that they would pitch towards a more political route towards achieving a united Ireland and would try to give up on the violent terrorist struggle, which they were fighting at that time, which was going nowhere. I mean, it was actually, they were going backwards and it was discrediting them with the Irish people and losing the support in, you know, even among sympathizers in Britain. When they took that decision, they looked for the opening that they could find as a party, the niche that they could occupy as a party, and that directed them to the left.
It was a conscious decision.
It was a conscious decision because, as I said, that was also partly the background, the situation in Northern Ireland reflected this. I think what happened was, as I said, this was a nationalist pro United Ireland party choosing to become, you know, to pitch itself to the left, which eventually morphed into a left-wing party. I mean, it kind of internalized it. And I don't think that's going to change. I think that is now the tradition. I should say that right here you go, all the way back to its origins in 1905, what makes it very confusing was that in those days it was also for a time a very left-wing party. As I said, when they proclaimed the Irish Republic in 1916, there was the Easter Uprising in Dublin. I mean, it was going to be the Socialist Republic, and they were all very much into that kind of thing at that time. Then, as I said, they swung to the right, and in the 1980s, they swung to the left. But, I mean, it is clearly and definitively a left-wing party now, and it would, if it ever became the government, govern as a left-wing party. And my prediction is that if that ever does happen, that will be the moment when you will see a reaction and you will start to see a right-wing party emerging in Ireland. I mean, because that's the way politics works. I mean, you have the left, when the left gets strong, the right starts to get strong. What you have at the moment, what you've had up to now in Ireland, is neither a left nor a right. You've had the European centre, and that isn't holding. It isn't holding in Ireland, it isn't holding in France, it isn't holding in Germany, it's broken essentially in Britain, and of course it's been rejected in Italy and Hungary and Poland. So that's the main point. The centre cannot hold. In fact, there's a wonderful poem by Yeats, which I'm sure many of our viewers know, because everybody talks about it, which actually talks about this, you know, that, and it has this extraordinary phrase, you know, the centre cannot hold. And in fact, it was written in response two events in Ireland way back in the 1920s. But the Eurocentre, the centre, the Merkel centre, if you like, is breaking down everywhere. It depends in particular parts of Europe whether the challenge comes from the left or from the right. Mostly, in most places, it is coming from the right, because frankly, the left in Europe is now just a broken, you know, dissolved thing. I mean, but in a few places, and Ireland is one, because of the particular history, it's coming from the left.
How would you describe, very quickly, how would you describe the political scene in Ireland to the UK, to Britain, with relation to the Tories and Labour? Is there an equivalent? What's the closest to the Tories and what's the closest to like a Corbyn Labour?
Well, I mean, Sinn Féin and Corbyn Labour are very similar, and they appeal to similar demographics. And of course, you have similar sort of politics in similar sort of policies for each of them. I mean, I would point out that Corbyn himself has been for nearly all his political life a Eurosceptic, and opposed by the Blairite centrists in his own party. They never trusted him, primarily for that reason. I mean, you know, I should know, because I know people in the Labour Party, just as I know, by the way, people in the Conservative Party. But I know how, they were very suspicious of Corbyn because of his past history of Euroscepticism, which everybody knows he internally still has. He was never able to express it. He was too weak to express it. But there is that similarity and there is that overlap. And if you're talking about internal British politics, you have I suspect the Corbynites within the Labour Party will take some encouragement from Sinn Féin's victory in Ireland. Now, if you're talking about the right, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael are essentially the Conservative Party of David Cameron and Theresa May. I mean, that's what they
Boris
are.
Boris Johnson, maybe, even though it's a little early now.
But it might be, and I think to some extent they are. I mean, I think that's precisely true. There is no Nigel Farage in Ireland. And
okay,
that's the fundamental difference. There is no Nigel Farage figure in Ireland, and it would be difficult for the moment to see that, actually. But, you know, couple of years from now, all will change.
Okay, taking a step back and to wrap up the video, Alexander, how is the EU looking at this situation? How is Boris Johnson looking at this situation? How is Northern Ireland looking at the situation? Mm. Like we said, they're trying to form a government now. You've given your thoughts as to whether they're going to succeed or not. How do you think on a geopolitical level, EU, Boris, Northern Ireland, how do you think they're kind of watching on here as we're seeing this unfold in Ireland?
Well, I think the EU will not be pleased. And I mean, again, I should say I know people who were pretty close to that world. So I know what their feelings are going to be. They're not going to be pleased about this. They had seen Ireland as this entirely loyal trooper that would, you know, follow orders unquestioningly. And now what they discover is that there's instability in Ireland, which they never expected. And they don't really know how it will play out. They will be hoping, and I think they're right to hope, that they'll be right, this hope will be a justified one, that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil patch something together and form a new government and freeze Sinn Féin out. And I think that's my guess, that is what's going to happen. I mean, the thing about the EU, as we've discussed so many times on our programs, is they don't learn, they don't understand that, you know, if even in a place like Ireland, which has been so loyal to the EU, they are facing problems. That means that there is something fundamentally wrong with the whole project. They won't learn from that. What they will try to do is they'll try to kick the can down the road, as they recently did in Italy, where, as I said, they patched up this ludicrous coalition between the Democratic Party and the Five Star Movement, which is now in, gradually starting to fall apart there too. And they were trying to do the same with Ireland. If we're talking about Britain, Britain is in a complicated situation because, of course, the British are trying to, they've left the European Union and they're in the middle of trade negotiations with the European Union. I think that Boris Johnson will not welcome this result because from his point of view, he's going to find that with the Irish, he's going to have more difficulty trying to get an agreement on the Irish border issues that than he would otherwise have done. Because even if we get a Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil part government, which I predict we will, I think they will be more aggressive in pushing for Irish unity than they have been up to now. And that, of course, is something that Boris Johnson doesn't want, but may have to accept. I think Irish unity is going to, as I said, as we discussed in the previous video, it's going to become a stronger force now. But the other major player in this within the United Kingdom is Scotland, where, of course, there is now a great deal of debate about whether or not to push for independence in Scotland. Scotland being a pro-EU region, but also pro-EU, by the way, in my opinion. Not because people in Scotland are particularly in love with the EU, but because, you know, it's anti-English. It's an anti-English position, if you like. But there's been growing pro-independence sentiment in Scotland. If they now see, you know, the prospect of Irish unification and the United Kingdom losing Northern Ireland, which is now becoming a real possibility, then I think that will strengthen pro-independence feeling in Scotland. And that will be very difficult for Boris Johnson. I think the Conservatives in Britain, in London, can accept the loss of Northern Ireland. I mean, it won't be easy for them, but they can accept it. Boris Johnson has already shown that he's prepared to accept it. But I think for them to lose Scotland, I think that would be a shock. And I think people like Nigel Farage wouldn't be too bothered because they're happy. You know, they say England is 87% of the United Kingdom and is by far the richest part of the United Kingdom. Let us be free. Let us be an independent and strong country as England. And that is fine. But the political class in London, which is pro-EU still, pro-globalist still, will not be happy if it loses Scotland because they will feel that they have lost face and they've lost weight and traction. So, you know, it's a complicated thing for the British.
Is the Irish economy really that shaky? I
mean, well, this is the funny thing. You see, it's one of those economies which, to all outward appearances, it's doing incredibly well. I mean, you know, Ireland has achieved extraordinary growth over the last 30 years. The trouble is, it's very unbalanced. What I hear is that it's based an awful lot on debt, and it's based on very, very much on very, very large capital inflows. So it's outwardly very strong, but also simultaneously very shaky, as was exposed very brutally during the 2008 financial crisis. Ireland has never really got over the financial crisis. I mean, the economic numbers are glowing, but people in Ireland, the way people feel in Ireland is that they feel that it's not really as stable as it appears. And the fact that the housing market is so unbalanced is a strong sign of the extent to which capital inflows are distorting the appearance of the economy. Same is true in Britain, by the way. It's because we are this, you know, place where people pour money pours into. It inflates house prices. Governments like the government in London and the government in Dublin then go on to prop up and encourage rises in house prices even more, because that makes the economy look even stronger and attracts more capital inflow and pleases older people who own these houses, who see them rising. But it leads for an ever more unbalanced economy. And it explains why people, young people in particular, feel so dissatisfied. It's the reason, along in Britain with student fees, why the young people in Britain have become so radicalized and voted for Jeremy Corbyn in such numbers. And it's also the reason why in Ireland they voted for Sinn Féin. So, you know, it's the same dynamic at work. But, you know, as has been often said, all is connected. And it's also part of Ireland's role within the EU. And can I just say something? I've got to know Ireland quite well over the last year. And one of the things I've discovered is that the political conversation in Ireland is pretty sophisticated. This is a well-educated country. People are very well informed. They are historically extremely well informed. And perhaps there's a rather keener understanding of the way these things play out than you would expect, and you often find in England itself. So in Ireland, somebody who's, you know, 25 and struggling understands perhaps rather better the sort of overall overarching structure and the role that the EU plays in it than perhaps would be the case in England.
Very worrying what you said about the housing market. And one downturn to occur and the whole thing could just pop.
Yeah, absolutely. Ireland. As happened,
Britain, yeah.
Yeah, as happened disastrously in 2008 in Ireland. I mean, it really did. I mean, the entire Irish banking system almost collapsed, and the EU came along and bailed it out and did all the usual things. It imposed stringent austerity policies, and a lot of people were very, very badly burnt as a result. Then what happened was, as the world economies recovered, with QE and all that, capital inflation.
If they really recovered.
Well, if they really recovered, yeah. But in a sense that there is that kind of recovery. It may not be a very synthetic recovery, but the fact that all this money was being generated, you know, created out of thin air, a lot of it has ended up in Ireland because of the structure of the economy there. But it has meant that the underlying problems that caused the smash in 2008 has never been fixed.
Fascinating. All right. Yeah. The world is watching, Alexander.
The world is watching. Yeah. And Ireland is an interesting country. I mean, it's small. I mean, it's only a couple of million people. But it makes the weather. And as I said, it will certainly have a domino effect on Britain. And as I said, the EU won't be pleased.
All right.
And its politics are evolving. just a minute.
Absolutely. I mean, you know,
it is a breakthrough. It's the start. It's the breaking of the ice, if you like. It doesn't mean that this is what's going to happen. As I said, if Sinn Féin does form a government, which I predict perhaps one day it will, then you will see a right-wing reaction in Ireland also. But at the moment, you know, the centre is still very much in control, and it's not allowed space for a right-wing party to emerge.
I think we both understand the situation in Ireland very, very well, because we're going through the same situation in Greece.
Well,
we've waited how many decades for a real viable conservative right party?
Well, there you go.
You know, it's always been center and center left.
Yeah, well, indeed. Absolutely. Well, we will see what happens in Ireland. But as I said, if you want change in Ireland, you really want change in Ireland, what you have to do is you have to overturn the centre, which has governed Ireland for decades. This Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael block in the middle. You have to get that out of the way, and then, you know, you will start to see a real politics emerge, because in Ireland, that's not what you really had up to now.
It's interesting you say that, Alexander, because it's always been that center that has emerged that's become kind of this neoliberal center.
Yeah.
Where maybe 20, 30 years ago, like you said, it wasn't like that. It was a little bit more center right.
Yeah.
Even in Germany, the video we did on Germany, even though that center, Angela Merkel has drifted that conservative right CDU to the center as well, in much the same way that you know, we've seen the left also move to the center, and then you've got this big, massive neoliberal core now all over Europe, and that's collapsing everywhere.
Absolutely, exactly, because ultimately it has no answers. It's exhausted. It has no fresh ideas. As I said, its only solution is to vilify its opponents by calling them all populists and claiming that democracy is at risk, which is nonsense. And at the same time, kick the can down the road, which is what it always does. It always finds a way to sort of patch up things and manipulate the process in some way, you know, setting up coalitions, working things through the back stairs. And then, of course, it's astonished when that in the end doesn't work. In Britain, it didn't work, but they tried very hard last year. If you remember, we spent all those hours going through it. But, you know, in the end, popular forces are rising against them right across Europe. And even Germany is cracking now.
Even Germany is cracking. And the U.S. is probably the most popular example of it cracking with Trump. But Trump, once again, was someone who smashed the center, but he did it from the, right.
He did it from the right. And I would say, by the way, that one of the reasons, I mean, I'm not taking sides, but what I'm simply saying is this: because you have a Trump, you perhaps have a Bernie Sanders. That's not to say, I'm going to vote.
It's a counterbalance.
It creates and it also, if I may say, what it also does is it brings back politics. If you have centrists in power all the time, what the Italians call transformismo, you don't have politics. And without politics, you don't have democracy. People are not able to have the kind of policies that they want. So to give an example, I know this is an issue that some of our people on our threads get very exercised about, immigration policies. You can't have an immigration policy if you're a member of the EU, because the EU decides it for you. If you think about it, I mean, that's how it works. So if you really want to change, if you want to have a country with a proper immigration policy, you have to have a sovereign country. You're not going to get that unless you have politics in your own country, which could challenge all of this. Ireland has not had that kind of politics up to now.
Excellent point. Alexander Mercurius, Editor-in-Chief of The Durant. Thank you very much, guys. If you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on the notifications bell. Smash that like button. Please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation helps keep this channel up and running. And please go to The Durant Shop. Pick up some merchandise, some magic mugs, and some awesome t-shirts. Whether you're on the left or the right, or in the center.
Well, indeed, yes. Well, maybe not so much the center, because, you know, I wonder how many centrists come to our programs. That's another story.
But maybe to report us to YouTube. I don't know, to flag us.
But absolutely, possibly, indeed so. But that's the point. I mean, you know, if you want to support us, then, as I said, because we have all kinds of problems with all the sort of, you know, the center, if you like, the center has never been very keen on what we do on the Durant. And you can support us by coming to our shop. That's one way of supporting us, and buying our merchandise in our shop. And we've made a specific point to go for very high quality merchandise. Our mugs, for example, which we've talked about many times and which we're hugely proud of, they could not be a better quality than these. I mean, these are the best coffee tea mugs you can find. And I say that without any doubt, hesitation, or apology. They are exceptional. They are beautifully made. They're wonderful porcelain body. They have this extraordinary luster. They keep your tea or coffee or hot chocolate really warm. They don't chip or crack. I've had this one now for almost a year, and it's as good as new. You can see there's no discoloration, no cracks or chips, no nothing. And for those who are interested, the badge there is the coat of arms of the Russian Federation, as you will find on Vladimir Putin's mugs. But these are better mugs than his, of that I am quite sure. And it's not just our mugs, which are superb, so are our shirts, all 100% cotton. You have long sleeve t-shirts like the one I'm wearing now, which are also incredibly comfortable. Incredibly warm on a cold, blustery day. But if you want to, if you've got a hot day, we've also got short sleeve t-shirts, also 100% cotton of similar quality. We've got V-neck shirts, and we've also got, of course, our amazing and fabulous polo shirts, which are the epitome of smart casual. We don't just have shirts, we also have hoodies and hats and stickers. We're now also really starting to work on developing our ebooks. You will already find four great ebooks on our top on various topics, which we've discussed in our videos, also in our shop. So you support us by going to our shop. You will be the proud owner of these great things. You will be helping the Duran, and you'll be spreading the message. So don't hold back. Come to our shop, support the Duran, be the proud owner of these great things. Alex will tell you how.
Go to theduranshop.com. You will find a link in the description box down below. Alexander Mercurs, Editor-in-Chief of the Duran. Thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.